Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday School, February 6th, 2011.
Turn in your Bibles to the 15th chapter of the book of Isaiah, where we read Isaiah's prophecy concerning Moab. This is one of the harder parts of the book of Isaiah to just read through. It's addressed to all of the surrounding nations of ancient Israel. And you may wonder why we care anything about those ancient nations: Babylon, Assyria, Philistia, Moab, Damascus, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Duma, Arabia, Tyre. And there are several reasons why this should be important and interesting to us. And we're in the 15th chapter of Isaiah for you who have just come. One reason why we should be interested in these prophecies against these ancient nations is because this is the way in which Isaiah wrote his prophecy. It concerned his time and various times to come. And another reason why is because those ancient peoples, most of them Semitic peoples, are still around today. They have different names, but they are still the same people, such as the Iraqis and the Palestinians and the Jordanians and the Syrians and the Ethiopians and the Egyptians and the Arabians and the Lebanese. They're different names, but they're all surrounding Israel today. And the events of our time make these prophecies of Isaiah very pertinent to today. If you've been following the news, you've been seeing how that it has been speculated that if Egypt and Jordan should become radicalized in their governments, and then the other nations of the area, such as Syria and Lebanon and Arabia and eventually Iraq, should be come radical in their government, that Israel would again be surrounded by hostile forces, just as they were in 1948. And what we see today, Israel surrounded by hostile nations, was the country called Judah at that time, from which the Jews got their name. And they faced the same thing that the Israelis do today. Now, in the 15th chapter, we've already studied before, in beginning with chapter 13, Babylon and Assyria. Those were two countries in what is today Iraq, and Philistia, which is almost exactly the same in territory as the Gaza Strip is today. Now we come to Moab in the 15th chapter of Isaiah, which was, excuse me, a country southeast of Judah. If you're standing on the western shores of the Dead Sea, you can look due east and see the hill country of Moab. This is where the country was located. Moab was a descendant of Lot, and their country was to the east of the Dead Sea, which in that day was a fertile pasture land. Today it's mostly desert, but it was a fertile pasture land then. And being a descendant of Lot, the Moabites were a cousin people to the Jews. And the Hebrew language of the Jews was exactly the same language of the Moabites. Some time ago, archaeologists dug up a monumental stone called a stela, engraved in old Hebrew characters, and it was a monument of Mesha, king of Moab. And the language was exactly the same as what Isaiah used in writing this letter. The Moabites were always the enemies of Israel. When Israel came from the desert in which they had been wandering for 40 years, they sent emissaries to Moab to ask permission to go through their land. They would pay for whatever they needed, even pay for the water that their cattle would drink. And instead, the Moabites made war against them. And in Isaiah's own day, the Moabites had invaded Judah and held considerable territory until Hezekiah, a contemporary of Isaiah, drove them out and conquered the country. So this is a poetic ode of God's dealings with Moab in their relationship to Israel. An oracle, or the burden, concerning Moab. Because Ar of Moab is laid waste in a night, Moab is undone. Because Ker of Moab is laid waste in a night, Moab is undone. He has gone up to the temple at Dibon, to the high places to weep over Nebo and over Medeba. Moab wails, on every head is baldness, every beard is shorn. In the streets they wear sackcloth, on the housetops and in the squares. Everyone wails and melts in tears. Heshbon and Eleala cry out, their voice is heard as far as Jahaz. Therefore the armed men of Moab cry out, his soul trembles. My heart cries out for Moab, her fugitives flee to Zoar, to Eglath Shalishiya, for the ascent to Luhith. They go weeping on the road to Horonaim. They raise a cry of destructions. The waters of Nimrim are desolation. The grass is withered, the vegetation fails, the greenery is no more. Therefore the abundance they have gained, and what they have laid up they carry away over the brook of the wills. For the cry has gone around the land of Moab. Her wailing reaches to Eglaim. Her wailing reaches to Beer Elim, for the waters of Dibon are full of blood. For I will bring upon Dibon even more, a lion for those of Moab who cry, who escape, for the remnant of the land. All of these words that we read here that are Hebrew names, they are place names in the land of Moab, and this whole poem was written to describe the total destruction that would come upon Moab because of the Assyrians in their march to control the whole of the area to become a world power of that day. The Assyrians would later beset Judah, and we'll read about that, and especially in the 36th chapter of this book. So if you want a preview of what he's talking about here, you can read the 36th chapter and before we come to it. But this land of Moab was a pastoral land, and they had several oases, and it was a rather pleasant land, and it is more desert today, but they say that today it is still a very pleasant land. Because Ar of Moab is laid waste in the night, Moab is undone. Ar was a city on the wadi, or the river Arnon, which the river Arnon was the northern border of the land of Moab. And the city in Isaiah's prophecy, he writes it as though it was already a ruin. Because Kir of Moab is laid waste in the night, Moab is undone. Kir in Hebrew means a city. So this probably was their capital. Kir of Moab is, we might read it as Moab City, the same as in our day we speak of Kansas City. It was one of the great cities of that country. He has gone up to his temple, to the idolatry's temple, to Dibon, where their national shrine was, to the high places to weep. Over Nebo and Medeba, Moab wails. Nebo and Medeba were two mountains just east of the Dead Sea. Mount Nebo is where Moses went, climbed the mountain to die. On every head there is baldness, every beard is shorn. This was a sign of extreme mourning in that day, to shave the head. Today it's quite a fad, but in that day it was considered a shame and mourning. In the streets they wear sackcloth on the housetops, and in the squares. Everyone wails and melts in tears. Heshbon was a place, a city, but it was a place that was in a rather mountainous region that was famous for its pools of water. You read about this city in the Song of Solomon, about the pools of Heshbon. It was a sort of a resort city in that day. Heshbon and Elealeh cry out. Their voice is heard as far as Jahaz. Therefore the armed men of Moab cry aloud. His soul trembles. My heart cries out for Moab, for her fugitives flee to Zoar. Zoar was a city south of the Dead Sea, the city where Lot went when the angel took him out of Sodom before Sodom was destroyed. Zoar means little, a little town. And so the fugitives flee to Zoar, south of the Dead Sea, to Eglash Shelishiya. Scholars don't really know where this one was. For as the ascent to Lehith, they go up weeping. On the road to Horonaim, they raise a cry of destruction. The waters of Nimrim, which was an oasis on the edge of the desert country, are a desolation. The grass is withered, the vegetation fails, the greenery is no more. Therefore the abundance they have gained and what they have laid up they carry away over the brook of the willows. For a cry is gone around the land of Moab. Her wailing reaches Eglayim. Her wailing reaches Beer Elam. That's another oasis. Beer means a well. For the waters of Dibon are full of blood. For I will bring upon Dibon even more. A lion for those of Moab who escape, for the remnant of the land. So this was a poetic elegy over the destruction of this people who was such a thorn in the flesh in the sight of Judah. And it continues on into the next chapter. Send a lamb to the ruler of the land, from Selah by way of the desert to the mountain of the daughter of Zion. This is a very strange verse here, but scholars are agreed that Moab at this time, having been conquered by King Hezekiah, was a tributary country to Judah. And in those days, they were pastoral countries, and the tribute was paid in cattle. So Moab and Judah had been on a war footing for a long time at this time. So he's encouraging the Moabites to make peace with Judah, and then Judah would be a shelter for them and would aid them. From Selah, which is the Hebrew name for the city that the Greeks called Petra, that city carved out of solid rock in the mountain that their tourists are is a great tourist attraction today. From Selah by way of the desert to the mountain of the daughter of Zion, bring like fleeing birds, like a scattered nest, so are the daughters of Moab at the fords of the Arnon. He is describing here how the civilians will be fleeing from their homes for the border of the land to try to find safety in the land of Israel. Give counsel, grant justice, make your shade like the night at the height of a noon. Shelter the outcast, do not reveal the fugitive. Let the outcasts of Moab sojourn among you. This is addressed to Judah, to let the refugees in to the country. Be a shelter to them from the destroyer when the oppressor is no more, and destruction has ceased, and he who tramples underfoot has vanished from the land. Then a throne shall be established in steadfast love, and on it will sit in faithfulness in the tent of David, one who judges and seeks justice and is swift to do righteousness. He's saying that all of this has come upon them because they hadn't been granting justice. They haven't been giving justice to the poor. And all of the complaints that we hear from the Egyptians in Cairo today in their demonstrations against their government, this was the way the government of Moab was in that day. So after all of these generations and centuries, things have not really changed all that much in that part of the world. We have heard of the pride of Moab, how proud he is, of his arrogance, his pride, and his insolence in his idle boasting. He is not. Therefore, let Moab wail for Moab. Let everyone wail, mourn, utterly stricken, for the raisin cakes of Kir Harosheth, that is the offerings to their idol. For the fields of Heshbon languish, this was the resort area of their country, and the vine of Sibma, the lords of the nations have struck down its branches, which reached to Jazer, and strayed into the desert. Its shoots spread abroad and pass over the sea. Therefore I weep with weeping of Jazer for the vine of Sibmah. I drench you with my tears, O Heshbon and Elealeh, over your summer fruits and your harvest. The shout has ceased. The joy of gladness is taken away from the fruitful field. In the vineyards no song is sung, no cheers are raised, no treader treads out the wine on the presses. I have put an end to the shouting, therefore my inner parts moan like a mire for Moab, and my inmost self for Kir Harosheth. The prophet is writing this as if all of this destruction has already happened. It hadn't when he wrote this, but just not too many years later, all of this was carried out in full, just as Isaiah had described in prophecy, for the armies of the Assyrians utterly destroyed the land of Moab. And when Moab presents himself, when he wearies himself on the high place, when he comes to his sanctuary to pray, that is all the rituals of paganism, this is the word that the Lord spoke concerning Moab in the past. But now the Lord has spoken, saying, in 3 years, like the years of a hired worker, the glory of Moab will be brought into contempt, in spite of all his great multitude, and those who remain will be very few and feeble. So that is his prophecy concerning Moab, which was a cousin nation to Israel, but always its enemy. The Assyrians would completely destroy it. Then in chapter 17, we come to the oracle or the burden of Damascus. Damascus is probably one of the most famous cities in the Near East. Jerusalem and Damascus and Beirut and Babylon. And Damascus is one of the oldest inhabited cities in the world. Babylon was older than Damascus, but it has not been continuously inhabited. Damascus has been inhabited by many different peoples at many different times, and each new people has destroyed the city and rebuilt it. It has been destroyed and rebuilt many times. It is on the eastern slope of the Lebanese mountains, of the anti-Lebanon mountains. And all of the waters on the east slope of these mountains flow down in several different streams, and they mingle together in Damascus in such a way that it is a natural irrigation of the whole city. And it has been one of the lovely and most coveted cities of that ancient day. But also in years, in about a century or two prior to Isaiah's time, a new people had come and conquered Damascus and rebuilt it and made it their capital. They are called by historians the Aramaeans, and their language was Aramaic. And this is the language that became, in time, the English of the Near East. It came to be a language that was the language spoken by the Jews in Jesus' day. Just as English is a worldwide language, now Aramaic was then. And there are even parts of Daniel and of Ezra and Nehemiah that are written in that Aramaic language. But this Damascus was also an enemy of Israel, of Judah, rather. Damascus in Isaiah's time had made a covenant with the Israelites in the northern kingdom of Israel, whose capital was Samaria. Damascus and Samaria had made a covenant to make war against Judah, to depose King Ahaz, and to install a puppet king there. And this goes back to the 7th chapter of Isaiah, where Isaiah told King Ahaz not to worry about Damascus and about Samaria, because these two firebrands, as he called them, will be destroyed. And the Assyrians, at the same time that they destroyed Moab, destroyed Damascus and captured the northern part of the kingdom of Israel, the area around the Sea of Galilee, and took their captives off to Samaria. And they became a part of what is called the 10 lost tribes. But those tribes were never really lost. So this is his prophecy against Damascus. And as we'll see in reading through here, also against Samaria, because of their covenant to destroy Judah. The burden of Damascus. Behold, Damascus will cease to be a city. And it did for a while, until it was rebuilt by later people, and will become a heap of ruins. The city of Arawar, that is the second city of Syria, are deserted. They will be for flocks which shall lie down, that is, in the ruins of the city, and none will make them afraid. The fortress will disappear from Ephraim, that is their capital city of Samaria, and the kingdom from Damascus. The remnant of Syria will be like the glory of the children of Israel, declares the Lord of hosts. In that day, and then the Assyrians did carry out this prophecy against both Damascus and Samaria. In that day, the glory of Jacob will be brought low, and the fat of his flesh will grow lean. And it shall be when the reaper gathers the standing grain, and his arm harvests the ears, as when one gleans the ears of grain in the valley of Rephaim. In other words, the Assyrians will gather will plunder these countries. Gleanings will be left in it, as when the olive tree is beaten, two or three berries in the top, on the top of a highest bough, or four or five, on the branches of a fruit tree, declares the Lord. In other words, the Assyrians will totally destroy them and leave only a remnant of people left in this. But in the book of Chronicles, we see that the people that were left after the Assyrians captured their captives and took them, many of them migrated to the kingdom of Judah. And many of those supposedly 10 lost tribes became a part of the kingdom of Judah. In that day, man will look to his Maker, and his eyes will look on the Holy One of Israel. This is a prophecy of the distant future. He will not look to the altars, the work of his hands. He will not look on what his own fingers have made, either the Asherim, that is the female goddess, or on the altars of incense. In that day, their strong cities will be like the deserted places of the wooded heights and the hilltops, which they deserted because the children of Israel, there will be desolation. And the Assyrians did carry this out not too long after Isaiah's prophesied. For you have forgotten God, the God of your salvation, and have not remembered the rock of your refuge. Therefore, though you plant pleasant plants and sow a vine branch and a stranger, though you make them grow on the day that you plant them and make them blossom in the morning that you sow, yet the harvest will flee away in the day of grief and incurable pain. No matter what they did to build up their land, it would be all destroyed. Ah, the thunder of many peoples, the armies of the Assyrians. They thunder like the thundering of the sea. Ah, the roar of nations. They roar like the roaring of mighty waters. The nations roar like the roaring of many waters. But he will rebuke them, and they will flee far away. Chased like the chaff on the mountains. We're going to read about this in the 36th chapter of Isaiah when he there records it as history. But here it is as prophecy fulfilled in his own day. As chaff before the wind and whirling dust before the storm. At evening time, behold terror. Before morning, they are no more. This is the portion of those who loot us and the lot of those who plunder us. And then the next is the prophecy against Egypt. But all of this poetry here was prophecy when Isaiah wrote it. Much of it he lived to see fulfilled. And as I mentioned at the first, all of these peoples are still present today in the Near East. Names have changed, boundaries have changed, but the attitudes of the people have not changed toward Israel. They were as anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, well, they're all Semitic people, so they were just anti-Zionists in those days, just as the Arabs are so anti-Zionist today. But the lesson the prophet is portraying before us here is how all the nations have always been against Israel. They were against Israel as a nation then. Since the dispersion of Israel, they have been against Israel as a people. Now that they are back in their land, the nations are against the nation of Israel today and against the Jews wherever they are in the world. This is nothing new. This is historic, going back as far as there was a nation of Israel or a people of the Jews. But just as we have seen all of their enemies destroyed in turn in ancient times, just as we've seen all of the nations of Europe who were persecutors of Israel come to a bad end, and all of the great states of Europe that were world powers and are now just individual elements in a weak alliance called the European Union. Just so will everyone, every nation, every people who is against Israel come to a bad end. And then we see how it all is wrapped up in the book of Revelation.